And what I handed out to you this morning is the classical Mikros Gedolos on this chapter 11. Now, just to bring you up to date, especially since we have a few guests here this morning, old friends who are guests, in chapter 10, Daniel sees a vision. He sees somebody who looks awesome and frightening, and it turns out that it is the angel Gabriel. And the angel Gabriel tells him that up in the very heavens, from the moment that you started praying, and you wanted to know what is going to be, it has been my responsibility to tell you. And he begins by telling him at the end of chapter 10, he tells him that there's a struggle going on in heaven. And who is the one that stands there to defend the Jewish people? The one who defends the Jewish people, their malach, their angel, their minister in heaven, is the angel Michael. And who is the one who's speaking? It's Gabriel. And Gabriel says that he stands there to assist Michael. The end of chapter 10 said that, behold, what he sees is that the angel of Persia has moved from the scene. Vihine Sar Yavon Ba, that was at the end of chapter 10, Pasuk 20. Vani Yotze Vihine Sar Yavon Ba, the angel of Greece comes. This, of course, represents a ship. This represents, of course, the fact that the kingdom of Persia is going to come to an end and its place is going to be taken by the kingdom of Greece. Now, we have two chapters left to go, chapters 11 and 12. They're not easy chapters to learn. I did give you some homework. I didn't expect you, by the way, to remember all of the names and all of the dates in the homework. All that I wanted you at this point to see in that homework is that there is a constant, ongoing struggle between the north and the south, between Egypt and Syria. This is an ongoing struggle. Nearly every year or two, there's another battle. And many of the marks of Margolis in that those few pages we gave you, don't list them all. But we're going to see, therein lies the confusion of this chapter in Daniel, because it's going to be a constant struggle between King of North and King of South, and to be able to put it into its proper historical perspective after the fact, this is the task of the Mefarshim, and therefore I want you to see the classic Mefarshim. We're going to deal mainly with Rashi and the Malbim, but here and there I want to point out to you a number of the other Mefarshim. The overriding question that we left last week, and we said most probably that we're not going to answer it until we complete the Sefer, what was the purpose of Sefer Daniel? One thing I assume we must take for granted. Anybody who had Sefer Daniel in his hands before the events could in no way whatsoever ever have anticipated the events. In other words, if I have the Sefer of Daniel in my possession during the time of the Persian Empire, and I read chapter 11, I know already that Alexander the Great is going to come, and after Alexander the Great, it's going to be divided into four and even more kingdoms, and there's going to be the Ptolemies of Egypt and the Seleucids and the Antiochuses of Syria. There's no way in advance that we would have been able to understand what it is that Daniel is saying. By the way, even now with hindsight, after the events have already taken place, you'll see so many different interpretations of the Mefarshim as to what he means. And this is after all of the history has taken place. So what I'm pointing out is, the purpose of the book certainly was not so that you should be able to anticipate the events. Now I know what's going to happen next. And I know who's going to win this battle. It's a Beferish, a Tazik, it's right there in the near. Now, that's not what it was. So what was the purpose of the Sefer? What do we gain by it? The only thought that I expressed last week is that certainly one is going to get this impression and this feeling during chapters 11 and 12, that there will be tremendous upheavals in the course of history, and even in a brief period of 100 or 200 years that are described in chapter 11, there are constant changes, ups and downs, and what Klal Yisrael has to learn in order to survive, the survival mechanism of the Jewish people is, number one, never to despair. In other words, if you know that this is the way it's going to be, there are going to be ups and there are going to be downs. Jewish history is not going to move in a straight line on a graph, but there are going to be valleys and there are going to be peaks, if you know this in advance, and that ultimately you're going to survive and you're going to be the kingdom that's the greatest of them all. It certainly assists the Jewish people in never despairing. There's another thing that we have to take into consideration. And that is, there's another mistake that we can make. The other mistake that the Jewish people can make is when a king who is good and kindly and devoted to the Jewish people, you begin to think that this is it, the Mashiach is here, the Mashiach is here. Maybe in history, Jews have to learn that even at the time that they can express their loyalty and their thanks, but there always has to be a shade of suspicion, because today's great friend can turn out to be tomorrow's vicious enemy. And it has happened. It has happened in modern times, and it happens there time and time again. There were some kings that were good to the Jews, and there were those who deceived them so terribly. In other words, most probably it could all be summed up in one statement of our rabbis, two words, Kabdehu v'chashdehu. You have to respect somebody, but there always has to be a sense of suspicion or being on guard. Jews always have to be on guard, because in the event that they let their guard down, it can be at great personal and communal risk to the Jewish people. These are only the beginnings of some of the ideas that I'm getting from Sefer Daniel, but I want you to think about it, and we're going to have to delve into this. What does it leave for us? What do we gain by having Sefer Daniel? I mean, it's much easier for me. I could speak for hours on what we gain from Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, and Yechezkel. But, I mean, here are dreams, and here are visions, and there's no guidance and direction. No, it's Yirmiyahu, Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, and Yechezkel. Tell the Jewish people what to do. There is a message. Do this, and don't do that. In all of Yechezkel, there is no message. Do this, and don't do that. All that he's just telling us. In Daniel, what did I say? Very good. Okay, good. In Daniel, and at no point does he come and say, so saith the God of hosts, do such and don't do such. He's simply telling us the visions and the dreams, either prophetic or divinely inspired dreams. So that means we're the ones who have to learn, we have to learn something from it. So far we have the beginnings of a number of ideas. Okay, now, yeah?
Why can't the people who sit and just know what was going to happen?
Because there's no way that they could figure it out. If you would be reading, you read the Pesukim now, and now we're 2,500 years after the events, and we have all of the Mepharshim, and you still won't understand the Pesukim. So how can somebody have said in advance, it's happening now? That's Pasuk 5 in chapter 11 that's happening right now in the near. There's no way. There's nothing you are ever able to anticipate. Why? It doesn't have to be quick. It can be a little less than quick. A little more than quick.
When
which decision was made?
In other words, when it was assumed that it could be who's in power.
When what? When it was included?
Right, in other words,
oh.
The decision was made.
That was certainly at the time of the Persian Empire. Because the men of the Great Assembly, I'll tell you, simple. More than simple. We're going to make it real. We're going to make it relevant. First Mishnah in Pirkei Avot says, Moshe received Torah at Sinai. He gave it to Yoshua to the elders to the prophets to the men of the Great Assembly. Men of the Great Assembly, that's the return of Jews to Eretz Yisrael from Babel. This is at the time of the Persian Empire. Koresh, king of Persia, is the one who gives Jews permission to go back. Now, who is the last of the men of the Great Assembly? The last one of the men of the Great Assembly was Shimon HaTzadik. That's where the NBD concert took place yesterday. I have to tell you who NBD is.
Yeah.
Mordechai Ben David. Concert took place yesterday at the Sheikh Jarrah in the at the Kever of Shimon HaTzadik. Shimon HaTzadik was the last of the men of the Great Assembly. The period of the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah was well over 100 years. Well over 100 years. Now, why is Shimon HaTzadik important? Shimon HaTzadik is important because the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says that when Alexander the Great, that's Greece, Alexander the Great conquered Eretz Israel, he must have been in his mid-20s, or early 20s, he conquered Eretz Israel, and he was marching from the coast toward Yerushalayim. Shimon HaTzadik, who was the Kohen Gadol, put on his royal raiments, the robes of the high priesthood, and he went out of Yerushalayim to greet Alexander the Great. Now, Alexander the Great was being accompanied by the Palestinians of the day, the Samaritans, who were Jew haters from day one. And here the two groups come toward one another, and I think it was someplace in the area outside of Petah Tikva. There are the ruins, the Herodian or Herodotus ruins of some sort. And it was at that point that the two groups met. And Alexander the Great got off his horse and bowed before Shimon HaTzadik. So all the Jew haters who were there said, "But this Jew, Alexander the Great, bows down? What happened to you? They should all be destroyed." So Alexander the Great said, "When I went out to battle and was victorious, I saw a face before my eyes. That's the face. Shimon HaTzadik." And therefore, this is the Gemara. The Gemara really is dealing with it on a... there's a halachic angle over here. The halacha is that the high priest is not permitted to wear his priestly robes outside of the Beit HaMikdash. So how did Shimon HaTzadik do it? So of course, the Gemara says, one of two things, either because it was in order to save the Jewish people, some there was a pikuach nefesh involved over here, in other words, in some way to appease Alexander the Great, and then there's also the possibility that it may have been exceptional and very special robes. The Kohen Gadol, you remember, on Yom Kippur, at the end of the Avodah in Musaf, the part that we sing about Marek Kohen, what the Kohen looked like when he came out of the Holy Holies. There was something that's magnificent and beautiful about the Kohen Gadol. And this is how Shimon HaTzadik comes toward Alexander the Great. So that means that the period of the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah began during the early years of the Persian Empire, and the last remaining member is still alive when Persia falls to Greece, which means Anshei Knesset HaGadolah, who included Daniel into the holy writings, it was early on during the period of the Persian Empire. It's 100 years before Greece is going to invade Eretz Israel. Anybody who reads it doesn't have a clue, can't have a clue, who the king of the north is, who the king of the south is. And I say, even now that we know the history, we're going to become so confused. Which king of the north are we talking about? Which king of the south? Because the fact is, Daniel is not going to take us through all of the struggles over Eretz Yisrael, because all of the struggles over Eretz Yisrael, we'd have to write a history book with every battle. But some of the main battles are going to be mentioned in his very, very unique and very special book. We're going to have to plumb the depths of the Daniel. All right. Everything working? Good. Okay. I'm starting again, chapter Yud Aleph, and you'll have to get a picture of the pages in front of you, which, by the way, is also one of the things that I have in mind. You should be able to have in your head a picture of the classic text. So you see the chapter Yud Aleph over there on the first line. Immediately below it is always Rashi, and below Rashi is the Mitzudas David. Then you have the Malbim. You see that? All right. And on the left hand side, you have at the top Reish Samer Gimel means of Sagigon, and then you have the Eben Ezra. So we're talking about Rashi is. I mean, I'm just throwing out the numbers now. Rashi is 11th century. Malbim is 19th century. Eben Ezra is around 10th, 11th century. Rav Sadia Goyen is back in the 9th century. I mean, we have a span of well over 1,000 years of Mefarshim. That's what we have over there. Now, let's go. We have to cover ground too. Va'ani. Who is the I? The I over here is not Daniel. The I is the angel Gabriel. Because, you see, this we've mentioned so often in the past, sometimes the chapter divisions come in the way of a proper flow of the text. But the fact is that even in the Masoretic text, there is a new paragraph that begins over here. But the one who was speaking at the end of the chapter before was the angel Gabriel. And the angel Gabriel is the one who says that you have somebody up there, Daniel, who's taking good care of you, and that's Michael. And then he says that I see the great angel of Persia leaving the stage, and the Tsar of Yavon, the angel of Greece, is coming. Vani, and I, Gabriel, the Malach, Bishnat Achat L'Dor Yavash, in the first year of Darius, king of Persia, of Madai, the Daryavash HaMadai. And we've said already a number of times, Daryavash HaMadai, the need, Daryavash, is the one who brought down the Babylonian Empire. He crushed Babylon. And now this is year one, therefore, of the Persian Empire. Year one. And you know what he's going to be telling him in this year one of the ultimate end of the Persian Empire? That means what's so fascinating about this is Persia is now reaching the peak of its power. And when a nation is at the peak of its power, one can never imagine, well, this is all going to end. Right? You know, I'm sure they didn't have polls in those days to find out how popular Persia is, and it wouldn't have made any difference. This is the peak of Persian power. And already, even before this pasuk that's talking of the peak of Persian power, Gabriel has already seen the Persian angel leaving the stage in heaven, and the Greek angel is already arriving. Most probably nobody even knew about Greece at the time. Greece was a little backwater town, a little province. It's only going to be 150 years later that a man by the name of Alexander, a young man, is going to turn Greece into a world power. Vani, Bishnat Achat L'Daryavash HaMadai, in the first year of Daryavash the Mede, Omdi L'Machazik U'Lema'oz Lo, I stood there to give strength and fort, to be a fortress unto him. According to most of the Mefarshim, he Gabriel is telling Daniel that I was there in order to assist Michael in heaven. I am the strength and the might of Michael. Look at the Rashi. Rashi, it's right below, Pasuk Aleph, and that's the left-hand column, four lines from the bottom, Vani, Bishnat Achat, Lata Yorash Hamadai, says Rashi, Binathol Malchut Babel, when the Babylonian Empire fell, V'hitchila Memshelet Madai Uparas, and the kingdom, the rule of Madai Uparas began, V'hoyu Mevakshin Sorei Madai Uparas Me'et Hamakom, L'hagbid Ol Memshelet Eimatam Aleichem. Says Rashi, that you know what Gabriel is telling Daniel? At the beginning of the reign of the Persian Empire, their angels in heaven wanted that Persia should be able to place a heavy yoke on the people of Israel. Their fear should come down upon the people of Israel. Ani Gabriel, Amadati, I Gabriel stood there, Lemachazik, Ulemaoz, Lemichael Sarchen, I stood there in order to strengthen your angel Michael, not to permit before the heavenly bar of justice that Persia should be given the power and the strength to weigh heavily upon the Jewish people. Let's go from Rashi for a moment. Let's go 1,000 years ahead. Let's go to the Balbin. If you go down from Rashi, you'll pass the Mitzudas David on your way down on the right-hand side, and then you're going to come to Bir Ha'inyan, Yotheach Laketz, the Malbin, and in the second line, Va'ani. You got that? I gave you directions. You got there? Va'ani. Now, here is something that in and of itself is very fascinating. Pedersh, Reish Yud Aleph. You know who Reish Yud Aleph is? I'll tell you who Reish Yud Aleph is. Rabbi Yitzchak Abarbanel. Now, Rabbi Yitzchak Abarbanel, his is one of the great Peilushim on Sefer Daniel, but it's not in any of the texts of the Tanakh, it's in a separate Sefer by itself. Don Isaac Abarbanel, of course, we know, was the treasurer for Ferdinand and Isabella, and he was given the opportunity to remain in Spain and did not have to be expelled with the Jews in 1492, but he chose to go out to exile with them. The Malbin, and this, I don't know if I once gave a series of shiurim on this, one who goes through the Malbin on Tanakh finds the Malbin very often rests his pirush very heavily on the Abarbanel, and he will always point it out. There are even a number of chapters in Tanakh where the Malbin says, I have nothing to say on this chapter, few chapters, because the Abarbanel has said it all already. In his commentary on this chapter, he is going to follow along with the Abarbanel for about two-thirds of the chapter, and then he's going to part. And he's going to explain exactly what he means. But to me, what's most fascinating is there are extremely serious differences of opinion between the Malbin and the Abarbanel, separated by about 400 years. Extremely serious disagreements on matters of principle, nearly to the point of matters of faith. And I'll give you one classic example, and you'll see why this is important to me. In his introduction to the book of Yirmiyahu, the Abarbanel makes a number of statements that are really very, very difficult to bear. Yirmiyahu, there are a lot of textual emendations. In other words, there are a lot of words that are read one way, written another way. There are a lot of times in Yirmiyahu where it seems it should be feminine gender and it's masculine, feminine. There are places where there are strange things going on in the text. The Abarbanel says, well, the reason for this is because Yirmiyahu started saying prophecy when he was very young and inexperienced, and therefore he made all sorts of mistakes. All right. Now, the the Maggid in his introduction to Yirmiyahu does a job on the Abarbanel that is unmatched, unequaled, and unparalleled. Now, I was zeichet to add a few of my own. For example, let me ask you, little children in Eretz Yisrael, do they know their masculine and feminine gender when 3-year-olds are talking with one another? They don't know the difference. Or do they know their grammar, simple grammar? So you're going to tell me you're Leo because he became a Navi around age 15 or 16, so he didn't know his genders, or he didn't know Yochid v'Rabin, he didn't know plural or singular. Come on, any kid, listen to the kids talk. Listen to the kids talk, they know. Huh? Yeah, but I'm saying, I just want to prove that that could not have been the reason why Yirmiyahu, it doesn't matter whether the Abarbanel knew Israeli kids or didn't know Israeli kids, but we who do know Israeli kids have to learn something good from Israeli kids, so we can learn from them that Yirmiyahu certainly knew the difference between Yachid and Rabim and Zachar and Akeva. Now, I don't want to go into the rest of what the Abarbanel says about Yirmiyahu, but it becomes a matter of great principle where the Malbim attacks the Abarbanel in such powerful form. He really, crushes the Abarbanel, because he establishes the following principle. Not only were the ideas of prophecy communicated by God to the prophet, the words were communicated. The prophet didn't make up his own words or his own style. The words were communicated. And once he establishes something of this sort, which is an extremely important position to take, it means, therefore, that if Yirmiyahu uses a singular instead of a plural or vice versa, it's because God wanted him to do that. And if he uses a feminine in place of a masculine or vice versa, that's exactly the way it was communicated. Because as far as the Malbim is concerned, not only the ideas of prophecy were communicated to the prophet, but the very words, the text itself, and the text is therefore holy. Like, you know what that means when the Malbim says that? That really puts the Malbim on the complete opposite side of the Abarbanel. And the beauty of it all is, despite the fact that the Malbim disagrees with the Abarbanel over such a vital and crucial issue, his respect for the Abarbanel does not diminish. And he can go on to the very next chapter and quote the Abarbanel. Right? But you know what that means? I think it's something that has been lost in our day. In our day, this whole idea of I can have a serious disagreement with somebody on something that is a matter of great principle, but it should not affect my whole attitude or my approach or my feelings or my respect for the individual. It's something that's mamish been lost, and I think it's tragic. If you're a kaifa, or if I think you're a kaifa, that's bad enough. If I think you're an apikiris, the fact that I think it means you already are. And if you are, you're no good. And if you're no good, I want nothing to do with you. And I'm going to vote for the other party. Yeah, that. Huh? If I wouldn't have said what I just said about the Abarbanel and the Malbim, I would begin a tirade against you for even considering such a possibility. The question that she asked is, does anybody ever consider the possibility that maybe these sort of mistakes, you know, plural and singular, masculine, feminine, or even changes in spelling, were simply, you know, honest mistakes over the course of the many centuries? What are you talking about? Millennia? What are they? Millennia. Okay, not millenniums. Okay. All right. Then you know what I'm. You know what I'm. Gonna, so what I'm going to try and point out to you is, and we have that on the page in front of us too. the transmission of the text was so precise. The idea of a mistake was so rare, the possibility just... There was a system called the Masorah. If you'll take a look on the right-hand side of the page, you'll see Masorah. You see the little paragraph, Masorah? I'm going to...
On the left.
I should never get my left and my right confused.
Same thing.
Well, come on. One of the members of my shul comes over to me this morning, right before davening, early in the morning. So thrilled, so happy. I have a few resident leftists in shul. You understand? Leftists who most probably were planted there by the Rabbeinu Shlalem either to aggravate me or that they should be aggravated by me, because I think I aggravate the kishkes out of them. And he comes running over to me right before davening in the morning and says, "Rabbi, I'm so thrilled to see that you're going to be speaking for Mavdal. I think I'm not this coming Wednesday night, I think, at Peichal Shlomo for English speakers. Son speaking for Mavdal." So I said, "What did you think?" I mean, so he said, "I assumed that you'd be for Gandhi or Begin or Ichud Halumi or anything righter than that." So I told him, "After all of these years, you don't know your rabbi. You don't know your rabbi. He's an enigma to you. But I'm happy that I made him happy." Now, so I shouldn't get... On the left-hand side of the page, there's a Masorah. I'm going to show you, as we go through, I'm going to show you a little bit of the workings of the Masorah. The Masorah was, before the day and age of the computer, it most probably was the most magnificent system of making certain that no mistakes, it can be transmitted from generation to generation with no mistakes. Therefore, the answer to your question is... But I still have to prove it to you. The answer to your question is, it never occurred to any of the Mepharshim. Even the Abba Benel, who is ready to say that Yirmiyahu didn't know his Hebrew too well because he was young. It never occurred to the Abba Benel to say, "Well, you know, all of these changes in the text of Yirmiyahu, listen, over the years, we lost editions of the text, and mistakes were made, it was shoddy." Nobody's ready to say that. And the fact is that nobody has said it, because anybody who's aware of the system that was used to protect the integrity of the text, it's such an amazing sin. It's such an amazing system. I'll try and find some classic examples. Anyway, the important idea to me is, God, how do I do this? And I just started, all that I did was, the Malbim begins by saying Perish that Yitzchak Abarbanel. So I just wanted to point out the relationship. There's some kind of a symbiotic relationship between the Abarbanel, between the Malbim and the Abarbanel, and despite the fact that he will disagree with him so strongly on a matter of such great significance that really deals with and treats the entire range of prophecy. Did a prophet get the words from God or just the idea from God? Can there be a more significant difference of opinion? And the Malbim is violently opposed. I shouldn't use the word violently. Violently in intellectual sense opposed to the Abba Benel. But that has nothing to do with his abiding respect for the Abba Benel. And here, listen, we're coming toward the end of Tanakh. This is long after he learned the Abba Benel on Yirmiyahu. And he's quoting him throughout. Perish Reb Yitzchak Abarbanel, Shabishnat Achat Odoyavesh, in the first year of Doryavesh, on Madatil Machazit Ulumaoz, I'm reading in the Malvin. You see immediately a difference? No, not different wording. Rashi said, "I stood to give strength to whom? To Michal." The Malvin and the Abarbanel are learning, "I, Gabriel, stood there in order to give strength to the Rebbe." You understand? Two ways of looking at the pasuk. Oh, what the Abba Benel is doing throughout, the Malbim is doing throughout the Niel, he's done it throughout the Niel, he will write the word the way it should be understood. He will take it from its poetic to its more simple. Umdi here really means amadati. I stood there. So now, according to Rashi, Rashi says it's Gabriel who is standing in heaven in order to come to the aid and the assistance of Michael. And now, if the Malbim and the Abarbanel say that I was there to assist the Yavesh, because his heart was good for the Jewish people. As Josephus writes, and they're going to be quoting both Rashi and the other Mepharshim are going to be quoting the history books in order to understand this chapter. Shenodal Yavesh Meinyan Hanichtav Shel Hamalach Upatar Shel Daniel. He says, remember we had earlier the handwriting on the wall? Who was it that interpreted the handwriting on the wall? Daniel. And what did Daniel say? That the kingdom of Babel is going to fall because they have used and defiled the vessels of the Bet HaMikdash. That means, if anything, you know what's fascinating over here, according to the Abarbanel and the Malbim? At the time of Daniel, a non-Jewish king learned what to do from Daniel. We won't be able to learn what to do from Daniel. But when Daryavesh became aware of this, so he decided, if Babel fell because they desecrated the vessels of the Bet HaMikdash, he's going to rebuild the Bet HaMikdash. The Nagalite Rishut Livnot Habayitz of Daryavesh made a vow that he was going to give permission to rebuild the Bet HaMikdash. Ubozeh Hoya Hamalach Lema Ozlo Lahotzi Adova Miakoach Al Hapoel Ayadei Koresh Chatano. So the Malach Gabriel is the one who now stands to strengthen the hand of Daryavesh in this decision, that Daryavesh has decided that he's going to build, give permission for the Bet HaMikdash to be rebuilt. And how is it going to be done? It's going to be done by his son-in-law, Koresh. And we've pointed this out a number of times. Daryavesh was the king of the Medes. Koresh was his son-in-law, and he was a Persian. He became his son-in-law in order to cement the relationship between Medes and Persians. Daryavesh was the king who brought down Babel. He lived for 1 year after his great victory, and then he died, and then Koresh, his son-in-law, assumed the throne of the great Persian Empire now, and he was the one who gave permission for Jews to go back to and build the Beth HaMikdash. Pasuk 2, back into the text, Va'atah, now, and then Agilah. I'm going to tell you that which is the truth. Now, it should not be understood as though the Malach was saying, you know, this is the holy truth, as though a Malach could say, a lion, I want you to know this is the truth. The word over here, Emet has another meaning. Emet means something that will happen and there will be no change. Now, Emet means you can count on this. It's going to be so. Ultimate truth. Emet Agila. There are going to be another three kings that will rise for Persia, Boharibi Yashir Osher Gadol, the fourth king of Persia is going to be very wealthy, and we will see that there are two opinions over here. Do we start with Daryavesh, and after Daryavesh comes Koresh, and after Koresh is Achashverosh, and after Achashverosh is Daryavesh the second? There's another opinion that there are four kings of Persia aside from Daryavesh. There are going to be another four kings, and the fourth is going to be very rich. Richer than cold and all of that. Wealth over here means embracing strength, power, land. And as he becomes strong in his wealth, Yair Hakol, and here they're going to be two pshatim. He is either going to awaken the jealousy of others, so they're going to come against him in order to bring him down, or because of his great wealth and his strength, he feels that he is invincible and he can go out after everybody. In other words, is it his great wealth and strength that arouses lust in others to come against him? And who are the others? Greece? Or does he feel that because he's so strong and so mighty, so there's some little province, Macedonia, over there that he's going to bring down Greece. But what's being set now in this chapter is the stage to tell us what's going to happen as we move from the Persian Empire to the Greek. Then take a look at the Rashi on Pasuk Bet in the left-hand column of the Rashi. He may owe Shlosha Malachim. The Seder Olam, our rabbi said, the Seder Olam was a history that was written by the Talmud. Zechorosh v'achashverosh v'doryavosh shebona habayit. Now, you have to understand, permission to grant the build the Beit HaMikdash was given in the days of Koresh. He gave permission. But then he reneged a few years later because of the objections of the local population. During the entire period of Achashverosh, and that we talked about in a shir on the Gilat Esther, and this is our Achashverosh, the one whom we know so well, who twice when Esther comes before him, he says, I will give you anything you want ad chatzi hamalchut, until that which will divide my kingdom. If you're coming in here to ask me to grant permission to continue the construction of the Beit HaMikdash, I will not grant that permission. And he didn't. Little was he to know, of course, during the reign of his son Daryavesh, while Esther is still alive, Daryavesh, the son of Ahasuerus, is going to give permission for the Beit HaMikdash to be rebuilt, and it's going to be completed. So here it is, that which Daryavesh, Ahasuerus was opposed to his whole life, something Ganesh Gaholf, the end was that the Beit HaMikdash was built. So now Rashi says, so if there are another three kings, so what is meant by Revi'i, the fourth? The fourth from Madai. In other words, three more kings of Persia, and you add that to the first one, Daryavesh, who is the Mede, so you have a total of four. I will say for Yosef ben Gurion Katov, in the Sefer, the history book of Yosef ben Gurion, it says, Shehayalo ben leKoresh, Koresh had a son, Shemalach Tachtav, Lifnei Meloch Achashverosh, before Achashverosh ruled, Ushmo Bambisha. Now, I tried checking that in the history books, but it seems that there was some king in between. By the way, in the Nevi'im, it's never terribly important, every king. What's important, in other words, there are kings who stand out, and therefore the time frame is according to the kings who made a big difference. Continuing in the Rashi, Ukecheskatam Shel Daryavesh, as Daryavesh grew strong, Bashro Yair et Kol Machuto, because of his great wealth, he aroused and awakened his whole kingdom, Lehilachem in Malchut Yavam, to go and wage war with Greece. It means the aggressor in the struggle between Persia and Greece was Persia. That's what the Pasuk is saying, which of course makes it very fascinating, because the aggressor gambles, or he doesn't think he's gambling, but he loses all, because Greece brings down the Persian Empire. And that's Pasuk Gimel. V'amad melech gibor, back into the text, you have to keep following me with your fingers and with your eyes. V'amad melech gibor, a strong king is going to arise. And you see the Rashi over there before you turn over the page. V'amad melech gibor b'yavam, a great king is going to arise in Greece. And who? Alexander the Smugdan, that's Alexander of Macedonia. Umashal Nimshal Rav, he is going to rule. Great rule, powerful. Vasak Kiritsono, he will do as is his will. Says Rashi, Vasak Kiritsono, Bidoryovesh, Melech Paras, Viyahargeyu, Viyakabel Malchuto, Viyishtadu Parsayim Liyavonim. You hear the fortunes of nations. Here it is, according to Rashi, it is Daryavesh, who initiated the struggle against, the battle against Greece. And you know what's going to happen? The king of Greece is going to do with Daryavesh, as is his will, whatever he wishes to do. And ultimately, Alexander is going to kill Daryavesh in battle, and Persia is going to become a vassal state of the vast Greek Empire. Ukaamdo Tishaver Malchuto. Ukaamdo Tishaver Malchuto. And when he stands and when he grows, We're talking about who? We're talking about Alexander. Uchaanto, tishaver malchuto. His kingdom is going to be broken. You know what it means? Rashi is going to explain. It's just as Alexander is rising to greatness at the peak of his power. He's going to be broken. He's going to die at 32, 33. And as he rises, tishaver malchuto, his kingdom is going to be broken. The teichot, and it's going to be divided. We learned these sukkim last week, but I want to go show you the various portion. The teichot la'aba ruchot hashamayim, and it will be divided amongst the four directions of the heaven. The kingdom of Alexander is going to be divided into four. Four generals are going to take over. V'lola acharito. It is not going to go to his end, which means the following. The Farshim will say acharito means his children. It's nobody from his family is going to get it. It's all going to go to generals. V'lola acharit. A person's acharit is his children. And in Alexander's case, his kingdom is going to be divided, and it's not going to go to his achadid, his children. And all of the four who are going to take over parts of the kingdom of Greece, none of them is going to rule in the same way that he did. None of them will be as powerful and as strong as him. Because his kingdom is going to be uprooted. V'la'achedim Milvad Eila, and the fact is that there are going to be other parts of the kingdom aside from these four. There are going to be others aside from these. That means while the major four shares of the kingdom went to the four generals, but there are going to be a little shtiklach here and there that went to others. And the fact is, some chapters earlier, Daniel saw a vision of ten fingers. The ten fingers were the divisions that came out of the Greek Empire. Let's take a look at the Rashi. Ukaamdo. Tishavei melchuto ukashiyat chazek hardei. When he's going to become very strong. V'yamod al chesgato. Amdo. He's standing up strong. Tishavei melchuto. His kingdom will be broken. Shiyamod. Because he's going to die. V'teichatzma abaruchot hashamayim. It's going to be divided into the four directions of the heavens. Katuv the Sefer Ben Gurion, in the book of Ben Gurion, we're talking about the historian. Shecholak malchuto la'arba roshim mi mishpachto. That it was divided. I know. Wait, sure. Hein dalid roshe nomer shero'o Daniel. In chapter 7, Daniel saw a leopard with four heads, Baru, and it said over there, and behold, Cheva Achara, another beast, Kinomer, the Logapin Arva, it had four wings, the Uf Al Gaba, with which it flies, the Arva Roshin Lechevata, and there are four heads to this beast. He sees a beast with four heads. Himshel Zeb Nizrach. He gave each one a place where he would rule. In one of the earlier visions, there were four in its place. We learned about the goat. The goat is that which represents Greece, and there are going to be four divisions there. V'lo la'acharito, watch what Rashi says now. V'lo tavo anem shalo lebanav, el lebnei mishpachto. And Rashi differentiates between family and children. Acharito means his direct issue, his seed. It's not going to go to his children. Cousins, ichveisa, brother-in-law. I mean, there are all sorts of other family aside from children. It will go to members of his extended family, but not to his children. V'lo tavarim and sholo lebonav el lebnei mishpachto, to the people of his family. Acharito eino nofel ela alashon banim. The word acharito only means sons, direct seed. And so it says, v'nisa etchem betzinot v'acharitchem besidot duga. Amos talks about the invasion of Eretz Yisrael by Ashur and Bavel, and they're going to carry you away in little boats. V'acharitchem, your acharit, is going to be taken off in fishing boats. So, who is acharitchem that's going to be taken off into exile in boats? Acharitchem are your children. V'tirgem Yonatan, and Rashi proves it. Tav Yud means Yonatan ben Uziel in his time. He says, u'b'neichem u'b'nateichon bedugit sayadin. Your sons and your daughters are going to be taken off in boats used by fishermen or by hunters. So acharit means they will. The truth is, I don't even know if Alexander the Great had any children. He did have children?
I don't know.
Oh, you don't know. Oh, so in other words, you're agreeing with me that you also don't know. All right.
I just got chills when you talked about being exiled in fishing boats. This is what happened to Danish Jews.
To Danish Jewry. Yeah. But they were saved.
They were saved
in fishing boats. Yeah. And Amos is talking about fishing boats.
They were taken out of their.
Good. Yes. Well, we're talking about Jewish boat people. V'lo k'mashlo Hashem Hashem. I'm continuing in the Rashi. V'lo tehi malchut shel elu chazaka k'mo shel Alexander's. All of those who are going to divide his empire, none of them are going to have kingdoms that will be as strong as his. Ki tinatesh malchuto, because his kingdom is going to be uprooted. L'chalek la'aba rashim halalu v'la'achedin nuvadele. It will be divided into these four main kingdoms and to other smaller ones as well. That's exactly what happened. Pasuk Hey. Now begins the struggle. The struggles between the kings of the south and the king of the north. And over here, there are going to be so many different shots, and the first one will take you through. Here is where I want the mountain. The first big mountain is on this pasuk. V'yechazak melech ha-negev, the king of the south is going to become strong. The king of the south is the king of Egypt. Egypt went over to Talmai, one of the generals of Alexander the Great. Umin Sarav. Who's the king of the south going to be stronger than? Obviously, what's understood in the pasuk, though it isn't said there, the king of the south is going to be stronger than the king of the north. Umin Sarav, and more than his officers. The king of the south is going to be stronger than the king of the north, understood in the pasuk, and his officers. Vayechazakalav, and he became strong over him. Umashal, and he ruled. Mimshal Rav Memshalto, his kingdom is a great kingdom. Now, at least if we can learn this Malbim before class ends today, we will have set the stage for next week. Take a look in the Malbim on the left hand, or the right hand side of the page. Vayechazak Melech HaNegev, that's in the first column, that's the extreme right column, three lines from the bottom. Vayechazak Melech HaNegev. He named the Perush Hamada Hazot Novohu Hamafarshim. In the explanation, in the commentary on this vision, the Mafarshim are confused. Uladati, and according to me, my opinion is Hamadeh Hazot Ba'al Fadesh et Hamarot Hadishonot. This vision here comes to explain previous visions that were seen by Daniel. In the previous visions, he saw animals, he saw beasts, he saw horns coming out of their heads. It's going to be taken from the animal kingdom, and now it's going to be translated into human terms. So that this vision here of chapters 11 and 12 are explaining the earlier visions of Daniel. Uladati hamara hazod ba'al faresh et hamarot el mishonot. This vision comes to explain the earlier ones. Ba'am Pasuk Lamed Aleph. In this chapter,
up until Pasuk 31, we're right now in Pasuk 5, up until Pasuk 31, had Olo HaPratim Sheyitavu B'Malchut Yavan Ad Antiochus Soder HaYudim. The opinion of the Malvim is that until Pasuk 31, we're going to have the story of the Greek Empire until we come to Antiochus, and there were a whole series of them, 1, 2, 3, 4, until we come to the Antiochus, who was the cruel subjugator of Israel in the time of the Hashmonaim. He was the one who brought about the rebellion of the Matityahu Banot. Shero'ah Inyano B'mara Hashniah, he saw the ideas were seen by Daniel in his second vision in chapter 8, Kamoja Katavnu. As it said over there, Umin Ha'achat Yotza Keren Achat Matzida, there's a small horn that comes out, and that small horn, it said over there, was a horn that spoke in ugly language, and that small horn is Antiochus. The Siper Koma, and throughout this chapter, until Pasuk 31, they're going to tell Koma Sheyavor B'Malchut Yavon Ado HaKeren HaTzeira. Everything that's going to happen with the kingdom of Greece until that small horn, which causes a tremendous amount of destruction, until that small horn comes. Now, there were others who said back there that the small horn is going to be the Roman Empire, which follows the Greek. The Shom, Omad Bisipudo, there the story ended, Ki Kvar Hodio Sofo Shom, because the end of the Greek Empire was already explained there, Kimosha B'Masha Kosov, what it said over there, Ba'ad Tsar HaTzavar Higdil, that there will be an end to the Greek Empire. And now he's going to say that from Pasuk 31 in this chapter, Hibchil Sapeni Malchut Romi, the small horn, as we said, is Rome. And he begins to tell you the story of Rome, Ulefadish, and to explain Masherah Ba'utamara, what he saw in that vision. As it says over there, V'hushlach Machon Migdasho, he's going to cast down the holy place of God because Rome is going to destroy the second Beth HaMikdash. V'tzavot Tinatein Al HaTamid, and the mighty army will come against the place where the constant sacrifice is brought. The yeter advarim shekvarba mechaya harviyat b'marat hakavmat zeh nimshach hapasuk lamadvav. You will see, you will understand this better later as we go through the chapter. I promise. Do we know that? And from Pasuk 36, he begins to explain min hamachazeh sherod the machazeh harishona, what he saw in his first vision in the seventh chapter, and in his second, we'll explain it all. Now, in the first story, here, Yatsati Bikvot, I have gone in the footsteps of Harav Yitzchak Abarbanel. Shepirizeh Heitei, he explained it very well, Al Pisi Purei Divrei Hayamim, through the stories of history. The latter Mephoshim have all followed in the footsteps of the Abarbanel. Levad, except, the Malvim says, from Pasuk 31 and further, my direction changes from the direction of the Abarbanel, and we'll have to see what it is. But he says, up until Pasuk 31, I follow the Abarbanel. Matiti Lederech Acher, I inclined in a different way. Mevu'ah b'sipurei divrei hayamim hakadmonim. Now he begins. It is clearly told in the history books, the early history books, shemin ha'arba malachim shemolchu after Alexander, from the four kings who ruled after Alexander, hitchasku achar kach shnayim levad, only two of them became mighty and strong. His kingdom was divided into four and into other lesser kingdoms. Only two of them emerged as truly strong. Melech HaNegev, the king of the south, who he explains to us now is the king of Egypt, Hadaromi Eretz Yisrael. It's called south because of where it is situated with regard to Eretz Yisrael. Umelech HaTzafon, and the king of the north is the king of Asher, Assyria, and Babel, Hatzfoni Eretz Yisrael, which is north of Eretz Yisrael. Shephilicus, Shemalach Ba'ashur, I think one of some of these names we had in our homework. Ubabel, he was king over Asher and Babel. Ubana Antochia, he built the city of Antioch. Who Ubana, he and his children, Kavshu Paras, Vrov Asya, Vyavan, they conquered Persia, most of Asia, and Greece, the Kula Nikraim B'Shem Antiochus. And they are the line of Antiochus. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Umimenu Yotza Antiochus HaRasha. From him is going to come. Not all of the Antiochuses were bad. And you can never talk in terms of just one Antiochus, you know. You grow up, you know, you learn the story of Hanukkah, and you think there's one Antiochus. It takes, you know, till middle age until you finally found out that there were a number of them. Umimenu Yotza Antiochus HaRasha Shefer. So Umalchi HaNegev Nikroim B'Shem Talmai. Talmius. He has the P in there. We don't... They have the P, but we don't pronounce it. So the kings of the south are Talmai. The kings of the north are Antiochus. Al-Shem Talmai Hadishon. First Talmai, Shemalach HaKar Alexander. Well, who hate on him? He was bad for the Jewish people. Ubno HaNikra Talmai. Polydifu or Polydifus, who Asher Tzivol Hatik HaTorah Yedei Shivim Zekein. He was the one that commanded the Septuagint to translate the Torah into Greek, and our homework described and discussed that. V'hoya Oheid Yisrael. You understand? He was an Oheid Yisrael, v'sholach Ritzutzim Chofshim, broken slaves. He sent them free. V'al Talmai Hadishan Omer. Now to the Pasuk. The Yechazak, Pasuk 5, the Yechazak, Melech HaNegev, the king of the south, became strong. That's the first Talmai. Min Sorov, Pedosh, the Yechazak, Melech Min Sorov, who, Suleikis, Nikator, Shehoyot Chilo Sar HaTzavot Tachas Talmai, the Hechazik Achakach the Melucha. The way the Malbim is learning is that commanders, one of his ministers, became even stronger than him and ultimately took over the kingdom. Vayechazak alav, v'achakach hechazik al melech ha-negev, u'mefaresh. In other words, this one of his officers took over the kingdom from Talmai the First. U'mefaresh neged ma'ashakosav u'melech m'sorav u'mashal, shemashal al ha-tzafon. Now there's another one who took over the north, the Neged Masha Kosov, when he said, Vayechazakalov, ki memshal dav memshalto shememshelet melech ha-tzafon, ayar dav ni melech ha-neged. Here there is the, it seems that there's a difference between Rashi and the Malbim. Who is the stronger of the two? Is it the king of the south who is stronger than the king of the north, or the king of the north who is stronger than the king of the south? Pasuk Vav. I must do Pasuk Vav before we close. Pasuk Vav. Ulekeit shanim. There are going to be struggles between the two. Pasuk 5 has described north, south, one stronger, struggles take place between them, and at the end of years, Yitchaboru, they're going to be joined together after a number of years. And you know how they're going to be joined together? Ubat Melech HaNegev, the daughter of the king of the south, Tavo El Melech HaTzafon, is going to come to the king of the north. We had that in our... Yeah. The son and successor of Seleucus Antiochus the First accordingly attempted to wrest the country from Talmai the Second, who was Talmai Philadelphus. I'm reading from, you don't have this. Now, Antiochus the Second concluded an arrangement by which he agreed to receive in marriage Berenice, the daughter of Talmai, and with her, the rights to Palestine, you understand?
Excuse me, I have a very, very...
Sidur Malay, exactly what I was going to say, Sidur Malay. In other words, you don't just get an apartment in Eretz Yisrael, you get all of Eretz Yisrael. That's the nothing. Yes?
No, I have a complaint.
What? A complaint?
And I read this history that you gave us for homework.
Yeah.
And this was during the time of the Second Beth Amidah.
Yes.
It had not yet been destroyed.
Yeah.
The country was not called Palestine.
Oh, well, so, first of all, what I would suggest over here is that your complaint will have to go to the publisher. But I distributed it because for lack of anything...
Same thing. You said he got rights to Palestine.
Oh.
He got rights to Palestine.
In other words, my loyalty and my patriotism has just now been thrown into question.
Oh, God. All right, I will do tshuva.
Okay.
I will do tshuva.
I'll forgive you. You made it.
Anyway, Pasuk 6. Now here, remember, I'll tell you how I would look at it. Assuming that this marriage is taking place, and I know Sefer Daniel, and I'm living at the time, do you know what I would say? Unbelievable! Do you know what's happening right now? There's a marriage being concluded between the Talmais and the Antiochuses. Isn't that precisely what Daniel said? You remember that, Pasuk? I could not know in advance that this was going to happen. There's no way that I could have figured it out. But when I saw the event, and I know the process, and by the way, that's true of all of Tanakh. The only way you can understand or relate the events of the day to Tanakh, the two things that are necessary. You have to know the events of the day, and you have to know Tanakh. If you don't know Tanakh, then it's all over. I don't know, I missed something in the last 24 hours. You know, all the exciting things happened this happening. Sure, was there some story yesterday about water on the Temple Mount?
Yeah.
Oh, so you see? A very reliable Jewish who comes out and says that there's some story. The Arabs are worried about it. The Mosque of Omar, there's water. I don't know, there's some water. I looked today, this morning, I went through the papers, I don't know where. So you must have said that it's with Tivut, you understand. They should go back to their Kaplan and find out. So I immediately said, what are you talking about? Zechariah and Yechezkel. Zechariah and Yechezkel say, V'yotzah, Mayim Chayim, Mayim Rabim, it's going to begin as a little trickle, coming out, and it's coming out from under the Dome of the Rock. They describe in great detail that there's going to be the beginnings of a trickle, and the trickle of water is going to become a stream, and the stream is going to become a river, and Zechariah describes the direction that it's going to take. It's going to go outside the Beis HaMikdash, and it's going to make its way all the way to the Yam HaMelech, and the Yam HaMelech is going to become sweetened, and it's going to become, what is it? Do you know what the Hayat is going to accomplish? Having those days, it will be full occupancy a whole year. It's all going to be, all the waters of the Yam HaMelech are going to become sweet, but it's going to start with a trickle coming out of the rock, the Evan Hashtia that is on the Dome of the Rock. So I don't know, I didn't see it in the paper, but this is a very reliable fellow comes on and says that the Arabs are having a problem, Muslims are having a problem. Maybe they know the Tanakh better than we do, and they're frightened that maybe this is the beginning then. But I say, when you hear a report of this sort, so the first, you have to know the Navi. If you don't know the Navi, you don't know what the Prophet said. Now, here, if somebody at the time knew the Pasuk, and I'm sure that there were many Jews that knew the Pasuk, take a look at what's happening. A marriage is being entered into between the king of the south and the king of the north. This is exactly what Daniel was talking about. But I don't think that they would be able to anticipate what the next pasuk was going to say, because there are too many ways in which to read and understand it. All right, let's just finish this. Ulekeit shanim pasuk 6. Ulekeit shanim yitchabaru. They will be joined together. Upat melech hanegev tavor el melech hatzafon. The daughter of the king of the south is going to come to the king of the north. Lasod meisharim. So Rashi says meisharim at the top line of Rashi. Psharat shalom beino bein avia. A pshara meisharim. The Malbim says meisharim is from Shir Hashirim. Meisharim e ahevucha. Meisharim is a description of the love between man and woman. The Meisharim represents the wedding between the daughter of the king of the south and the king of the north. V'lo tatzor korach azroa, v'lo yamod uzroo, v'tinatein hi umevieha, v'hayolda umachazika beitim. It's not going to work. It's not going to work, and she and her children and her father are all going to be given over into the hands of the enemy. And here, this pasuk, if you want, we'll go over it again next week. We'll see it in the Malbim himself. It's precisely the piece of history that we have over here. That Berenice is going, the daughter of Talmai is going, with her rights to Eretz Yisrael. Okay? That was Tshuva to Palestine. After the death of her father, Antiochus divorced Berenice, but the former queen, Laodice, whom he took back, procured his death by poison. What was it you always quoted? There's nothing like a woman scorned. In other words, he's going to take her, he's going to take his first wife back, and she's going to poison him and his children, and to be continued.